Welcome to the Iron Wales podcast, proudly brought to you by Be Excellence, as part of our unwavering dedication to inclusive media. On this podcast, we shine a spotlight on the remarkable individuals who proudly call Wales their home, from visionary business owners to gifted creatives and all those who inspire us with their stories. We celebrate their contributions to shaping Wales into the diverse and vibrant nation it is today. So whether you're tuning in from the bustling streets of Cardiff, the picturesque landscapes of Snowdonia, or anywhere else on the globe, join us as we explore the rich tapestry of Welsh culture, creativity, and innovation. So in the studio, we've got Kiani with us. Morning.
Hi, good morning.
How are you doing?
I'm good, thank you. How are you?
I'm really good, thanks. I'm really excited for next week, Kiani, because it's Race Equality Week. Mm-hmm. And I know you and I do this work every day, so we don't need to be reminded. But sometimes I think these conversations around race and equality, I know, you know, in 2020, it was like everywhere, wasn't it? And everyone was like really calling to action and implementing mm-hmm. things. And then I feel like it's died down a little bit. Do you feel that?
Yes, I've definitely felt that, I think, within every day. Mm. But I think it's there a bit more in education now.
Yes.
To the Welsh government.
Yeah. I mean, the anti-racism action plan is great, but again, it is a plan. Mm. It's not a piece of legislation. So it is an aspiration, is an idea. And we need to do better, I think, in terms of making that an actual piece of legislation outside of the Equality Act as well, because I think it's completely set itself apart from everything else. But yeah, tell listeners who you are, what you do, and what your work is all about.
Thank you. I mean, that ties in perfectly to what I do. So my name's Kiani. I'm an anti-racism consultant and coordinator and working in further education specifically, so colleges and higher education and universities. The way I see the Anti-Racism Action Plan is a great start.
Mm.
It's creating the conversations. It's starting people to critically think in that space, which is what is needed to learn and
absolutely
start making those changes that are so important for such resilient people that are out there waiting for something to happen.
Absolutely.
And I think that's what we're doing. We're always waiting for something to happen, and there's little bits thrown out and not enough is done. So what I do is I come into institutions, and I do this commercially as well as in education, but I create tangible actions to support ED&I, so equity, diversity and inclusion, so that you're actually seeing within your project, within your semester, within your season, you're seeing those changes develop. And it's a good start. And there's writing there to support us and to get us going.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's the conversation is happening.
Yes. And I believe as well that, you know, this plan helps us kind of implement, you know, the recommendations in certain areas and where we should be working. And, you know, we have the new mandated curriculum, which is amazing. And that's a start. It doesn't mean that every school is implementing it, because I've seen that across the board. But as you said, it is a start. And when I was saying earlier to the audience that when we talk about anti-racism and racism, you can feel the energy shift in the room. You know, people feel really awkward, but really they don't need to, because it's like, you know, number one, you need to validate someone's experience, I think. So if somebody is saying that they've experienced this, then it's not for them to say that hasn't happened, you know. And also it's about, you know, understanding that I could be on my nose twitching then. I don't know what that was about. The aircon just blew some dust in the air, I think. Oh my gosh. So yeah, as I was saying, what was it? Oh my God,
thrown
the menopause.
By the sneeze and the aircon.
Yeah. Oh, that's it. So we have, and I say this all the time, and when I do my anti-racism training, I always talk about, I start from the premise of, we as people did not create this current system or the systems that are in place, you know, we inherited them. And I think that puts people at ease in the sense of, like, I'm not calling you a racist because you're white, you know. So I think that is about bringing people on the journey and understanding that we're all a part of this system, and it's worked for some and not for others. And it's just in that recognition that that's where we can start.
Definitely.
From.
Definitely.
Yeah.
And you know Rachel Clark. She's been on
I
the
do,
show
yeah.
Before.
She's amazing. Yeah,
yeah. She's great. And she started up Apex Education, but that's in England. I was at one of her talks once, and she introduced me to this visual, and it's two sharks. And on one of the sharks, it says, white supremacy isn't the shark.
Mm.
And then there's another shark, and it says it's a water that we live in. So it's the society that we are within.
Yes.
And that's what allows for these conditionings, although it's an invented system, we live within it. It is our everyday. Mm. And we live with people who ourselves have a little bit of this, little bit of a shark within us.
Mm.
Now, we can definitely, as sharks, come together and change the conditions of the water, if the water is what is creating the conditions for this.
Yeah.
And coming together and creating these actions where we dismantle and reconstruct is how we can go forward, definitely.
Absolutely. I love that analogy. That's a really good analogy, isn't it? Yeah, because we talk a lot about the matrix. My anti-racism training is called The Matrix. We talk about the matrix a lot, and I think using simple analogies like that can people can relate to. So tell me how, in terms of the curriculum, have you seen positive changes implemented, or has there been some negative? I'm sure there's both.
Yeah, there's both. I think especially working anti-racism, it can be met with a lot of resistance. So you just keep going and you meet it with compassion, because people don't know, and that's what ignorance is.
Yeah.
And we have to be big and strong enough and resilient enough to be aware of that little bit of a shark within us and a little bit of that unknowing within us, and it can be scary, but we do not grow in comfort.
Yeah. Oh, I like that. And we do not grow in comfort.
No, and that's why they're called growing pains.
Exactly. That's true. Yeah.
So I think the things I have seen is people ready, people with the passion, and their appetite is enormous. And so a lot of the time when I'm in those rooms and we're doing the work that's so meaningful, people are ready to put them forward. But funds is probably the negative side of it.
Yeah.
Because people are so hungry for it and ready to go.
Mm.
However, the funds seem to be the issue all the time.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, I'm seeing lots of changes. I'm working with Bridgend College at the moment. And I'm working with the services to people. And they've just had a really successful Industries Insight Week. Mm-hmm. And they made Sri Lankan chicken curry with the catering students, and also do you know the real thing from in Cardiff?
Oh yes, yeah. the Caribbean food.
They're going in and doing a session as well. So there's small things that are happening, but there's a whole cohort that are understanding much more, and that's one simple example. So there's lots of ripples like that happening with lots of different departments.
I'm going to be very critical of that in a second, but before I do so, I want to go back to the conversation about race. So in terms of race, if we bring everybody on the journey, as I said, around the systems that we, the water, and explain how racism has stolen from everybody, I think, again, that brings us to a collective kind of starting point, rather than seeing the victim and the victors, you know. It's like, well, actually, you've racism is stolen from you as well, because you've had less access to people, a rich history, you know, access to lots of different diversity. And so, yeah, if we bring people from that kind of starting point, I think that's really powerful. The reason I'm critical of the food thing is because, you know, when we see diversity, it's always around food, music, and some kind of entertainment. And we need to start leveling that up and refuse to be the added tick box in terms of entertaining people. I really believe that. So I'm very strong on that point, because I work with a lot of self-employed black and minority businesses. I call them BOMs. And a bank, a bank asked me to find some, thank you so much for, you know, setting up your BOM Facebook page and Instagram. We now know who these businesses are, right? So there's loads of reasons why businesses, black-owned minority businesses, don't scale up. And we've talked about that briefly this morning and lots of times on the show. This is why the BOM exists, for a start. But this organisation, this bank, if you like, said to me, we'd love to bring some of them in during Black History Month and Race Equality Week. And I was like, okay. So I sent them a list, emailed them a list of who these businesses were. And then when the time came, I specifically said to them, I'll only come in and give a talk if they work with these businesses, right? And I purposely kept food off the menu. Literally, because I was like, no, we need to highlight the excellence that's going on. And I'm not saying the food and music isn't excellence, of course it is, but there are other things that we contribute as well, and we need to highlight that. otherwise, there's always this idea of we're here just to entertain you, to entertain the world. Yeah,
I think it's either there's so much erased history. So that example was specifically for you know, a catering course. However, I completely agree. It's either from a suffering stance or a service
stance. Exactly.
And due to race history, they're the only places ethnic minorities or global majorities exist within. Because it's the only way we have been accepted. And it's the only place we are in history. Now, what we need to do is turn that cultural appropriation to a cultural appreciation. You cannot do that without being self-reflective. Number one, it's a personal journey for all of us, because we all have biases, but also understanding erased history. So I do a lot of sessions on that, also on decolonizing your thoughts and critically thinking to be able to learn.
Yeah.
And also decolonizing language. You'd be so 100%. Surprised with how many of us in our internal monologue is simply such colonized language. And that's what limits us.
Absolutely. I say, Kim, don't I say all the time, is all about words. And this year we've shifted from inclusion to infusion. Because inclusion says to me, anyone that's heard me on the show will go, oh, she goes again. She says this every week. I do say it every week because it needs to be embedded in your mind and your psyche and your everyday work. Because, yes, inclusion to me says that it's our party and we're inviting you, which means that we can be uninvited. Whereas if we say infusion and we're all a part of this, right, then that speaks very differently about how we all came to be and how we're all contributing and our efforts. My grandfather set up Wales's first Indian restaurant. And, you know, because of, as a result of that, now there are thousands of restaurants across Wales, right? You speak to most of them, they know of the Bombay, of my grandfather. That's a legacy that they stand on, that platform, you know? Thousands and thousands of restaurants, thousands and thousands of employees, and God knows how many millions to the Welsh economy. That is not an inclusion. That is not an include. That is not a contribution.
Definitely,
that is a part of the jigsaw of Wales.
Definitely.
You know,
and to touch on the erased history, they were the only jobs people were allowed to do. They were the only ways people were able to get into the business, to get into having their own businesses, and move from a service to a business, although it's still service. I think back when it was Tiger Bay, I think even before that, people who looked Chinese or Vietnamese were only allowed to own restaurants or laundrettes. You weren't allowed to do anything else.
I work with a lot of business people. Well, I work with a lot of people who have PhDs, masters and all the rest of it, who are not using that skill because they can't get into those jobs and are defaulting to, oh, I'll do some food. I see it all the time,
but it's the same now. The restaurants have now changed into care work. And it's the only jobs people are allowed. We have people who are engineers.
Absolutely.
We have people who are teachers.
Yeah.
It's soul crushing knowing the truth and to try and tell others about it.
Yeah.
Can be deflating because I feel so helpless. What can I do? I'd rather ignore it.
Yeah. Well, what I did with that bank in particular, the day before we were expected to go into, I was expected to go into give this talk. I don't believe in speaking on behalf of others. Okay. I'm mixed race. I'm very mixed race. I can talk about different things, but I can't talk in depth about other people's experiences. And I wouldn't ever put myself in a position to say that I can. So I'm not representative of the whole diversity of Wales. And how dare I even think that? So don't come to me to try and learn about the Caribbean community, because I'm not Caribbean. You're not going to, and I don't know, you know? So I think a lot of these invitations to give talks are like a tick box. Oh, we'll get Donna in. She can talk about, you know, the global majority in Wales. And then we've done our bit for Black History Month. No, not at all. So what I said to this organisation was, they rang me to see if I need any parking, and I said how did it go with the other businesses? Are they coming in? Who have you got coming in? Oh, what we're going to do, we're going to do work with them in 2024. So I refused to go in, and she was like, oh my god, you know, you had hundreds of people due on this talk and online as well, and I refused to go in. That's the action we can take. Refuse to be a part of perpetuating
it's
this
really tough
this
because
cycle.
You get given this platform, you get given when you least expect it as well sometimes. And it's like, how can I use this? And what you've done there is looked at it in a sociological aspect, mm-hmm. in the wider context, not just on that day and absolutely. With the organisation.
And the money, because they think the money's going to entice you. And I said, no.
Yeah.
And also, she was really upset and she was obviously a little bit shocked because I said no. And I said, it doesn't matter what I could have come and talked to you about tomorrow, mm. right? Me refusing to come in should be a bigger lesson. Do you see? Mm-hmm. We're not here just for... Because the only organisation she brought in, which was not one I sent to her, she said, we do have somebody coming in for do food. And I said, there you go. There you go. So that was a bigger lesson in integrity, in the fact that we are not going to be exploited. We are not a tick box exercise. No. So for me, there's nothing more powerful than I could have said to that organisation. And my refusal to go in, I think, was more of a teachable moment than anything that I could have talked about.
That's amazing. You looked at the institution there and you taught the institution a lesson and you made them, force them to critically think.
Yeah.
However, it is also, so what I also do is I get a lot of people come in and do talks and to colleges, schools, organisations, and it's up to them what they speak about and what they want to show and what aspects of themselves.
Mm.
And through that, it isn't important who they are and what their roots are.
Mm.
I mean, that already comes through just in their language, just in their sound, just in their vibrations. Mm. However, what they speak about is the subject matter, the topic, and their intellect, which is usually something that is overlooked.
Mm. Absolutely,
and
definitely.
It's hard to be done, and you have to use your platform. So it's one of those spaces where I'm like, okay, I'm here. I have maybe a toe in the door. I wouldn't even say a foot in the door, okay?
Yeah.
And it's like, how can I bring others through while this gap is there?
Yeah.
And that's what I try to do the most. Mm. Because like you said, you have to try and represent so many different people. And it's like, okay, everyone come through while I have this space.
Yeah. I agree. But I've been doing this intensely now for over 4 years. And I've learned that, you know, I've been brought into organisations, I've given a talk and I've never heard from ever since. So I'm not ticking nobody's boxes.
Mm.
And there's, you know, when I've explained that story to other people, a couple of other people have said to me, oh, you could have gone in and had an opportunity. No, I think me saying no, because you need to remember when we talk about these things, you're bringing the well-being with you.
Mm.
So I'm not going to be used for whatever amount of money to and then go back to work and be frustrated and traumatized or, you know what I mean? Put in this space where I'm thinking,
exploited,
are we
like
actually doing work? Is this actually making a difference? And I could be doing something more productive for the communities I'm working for.
Mm-hmm.
So who am I working for?
Yeah.
I don't need to spend my time and effort trying to help you and change your mind. You need to do the work. And doing the work is also engaging with who we are as people. I think we have to move beyond that and forward. So if we want to infuse things, then we need to infuse it by changing our words and our language. So
I like your use of infuse, because it's difficult to pull things apart when they're infused.
Yes.
And I think to talk on that, if we look back, maybe my parents or even their parents, people were more together.
Mm.
There wasn't so much segregation.
Yeah.
I mean, classism has always been there. Racism has always been existent. I mean, the Equality Act first came about in 1965, and that was in December of 1965. And when it actually came about, it didn't even cover within the households. That was only in public to protect people from discrimination. And people were then protected from discrimination in 1971, again, December. Mm. So if you think about it like that, how were people so together even though laws weren't trying to support
That's true.
Discrimination.
Yeah.
And I like that thinking because, like you've said, on the theme of infusion, why aren't we all friends?
Mm.
And that simply, and that you can keep asking yourself that question because what's within me as well that's stopping me from being friends?
Mm.
And even when I'm in hostile situation, I've turned to people and I've said, we could have been friends. It's one of those situations. Society has not helped.
Mm.
Law enforcement has not helped.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot of hostility out there and a lot of anxieties out there at the moment.
Yeah.
And unless we stop being afraid of each other, we're not going to get there.
But this is why I think language is important and bringing people on the journey together instead of them and us. It's about, like I said, how did racism steal from all of us? And I think that's important. It's a really great place to start. You know, when you're talking about the law enforcement, the Act, I think it only came in 1968, which protected the public from the from the police in terms of racism, which was crazy because they were allowed to say whatever they wanted to until 60. Not that they still do now, but, you know, it's just crazy to show that we have still so much to do. 68 wasn't long ago. I was born in 73. You know what I mean? That's
No.
I was, yeah.
Wow, I need your skin routine.
So tell us a little bit more about the education work that you're doing.
What I'm doing at the moment to support all of this, I think you've got a little bit of a taster of who I am and what my views are. And I want to bring everyone on this journey of deconstruction to reconstruct. And deconstruction is what I do, essentially. I come into the classroom and we do surveys to see what the current, like an audit, to see what the current atmosphere and culture is of the institution, whether it's commercial education.
Right.
And get an idea of what people want, what they want to see and who they are. It's got to be people-centered. Because unfortunately, as we were just speaking, law simply isn't.
It's not a very sticky plaster.
Adhesive's gone.
It's true.
And I think without acknowledging those things and without being aware of them, it's hard to dismantle it and break that plaster away to make it stronger. Staying with that analogy. And then from there, I create bespoke workshops and training, and also for staff and students. And it's one of my favorite things to do because no two sessions is the same.
Yeah.
No two organizations is the same. And the things people come up with, I learn every day. And it's amazing. There's so much we can do and there's so much people want to do.
Yeah.
And then we do, one of the first things I do is decolonizing language. Now, one example is the colonialized mindset is I will win. And the decolonized mindset is we will win.
Yeah. Okay.
And my internal monologue to myself has changed drastically since I've started doing decolonizing language.
Absolutely. It's great.
It's way more inclusive. I feel happier, lighter. It's amazing going through this to see what the constraints of colonialism is. And I know thinking about that can be quite taboo. And it's like, but we're so far from that history. Yeah. But we're living. We're living that history also is what people forget. And to bring it apart, I do these sessions where we have conversations like this and we have a look at how it impacts us and how that might impact somebody else. Because we all have feelings, we all have emotions. And that's where we can then come together to start creating. And the sessions we do are fun, they're safe, they're caring. They're creative.
Yeah.
And from there, we then go on to decolonizing critical thinking and decolonizing history and just bringing to light the erased histories.
Yeah.
What is it that we don't know? Who else is out there? I mean, we've got the Darwin and Wallace, which is survival of the fittest. It's huge in evolution. Darwin used all of Wallace's findings.
Right.
And Darwin's a guy we know. And what else is there? Both of them were white guys, by the way. Two different class systems.
Yeah.
Who else is out there using somebody else's theories?
Yes.
There's so many facts that I've learned that I have made me belong and made me stand up taller. Because honestly, being in an oppressed system, especially women can always relate to that. It really gets you down. And working together like this puts a smile on my face.
Yeah, I absolutely love what I'm doing. And, you know, I love what I do every single day. And I love it even more when I see language change and people change and want to approach you as well. You know, I think that's quite powerful that they reach out to you.
It's freeing,
you know?
Isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. Because it's like, we really want to work with you. We want to know, you know, we want to learn. We want to learn. We want to get to that place. I generally believe that white women are the key to dismantling racism in Britain, in the UK, in the world.
They get a platform in areas that other women potentially don't.
I think because they are the ones nurturing children, the future generations of children, and they have an influence in their husbands. That's why I think it's all about the next generation. So, you know, if we have women in this space who are allies and they're getting it and they're willing to do the work and really knuckle down in going into difficult areas and difficult conversations, then they're the ones who will then nurture the next generation.
Can I ask, is that not accidentally segregating others who might have a platform and others who might be nurturing children?
No, not at all. I think we all have a powerful place. But if we look at the percentage of the global majority in Wales, we're a very small percentage. And the other are a large percentage. Mm. So if this work is done within our communities, if you like, and our children, we're living the experience. So it's difficult to... we live in a system that is created without us, you know, on the outside of us. So I think white women in particular, who are bringing up the majority of the next generation in Wales, for instance, they have a powerful place to do that within their home. It's not about platform, it's just about responsibility. It's about, you know, humanising your child. It's about bringing your child up in a way that they will be fair and equal to others with understanding.
Yeah, you know? I mean, we all have a lot of responsibility and burdens on our shoulders. It is difficult to carry that backpack of responsibilities. And I would say I completely agree with you because sexism exists and white women can understand the struggle to an extent.
Yeah.
They have a certain lens. But I would also argue that, or not argue, but also say that men of colour or from ethnic minority backgrounds also understand it because they have spaces where they're listened to way more than the white woman. So I think we must come together. And it's interesting because obviously that's also our lens to ethnic women, that we're like, guys, you're up there. If we look at the social ranking, we're probably like, you guys have more of a more of a chance, help us. We're trying.
The reason I said that is because I'm talking about not from a platform place, but just from a home, just where you you know, you are basically raising a child to become social, a social animal. So therefore you have to prepare it for the complexities of society, so the, you know, the differences in all the things that they will encounter, and to be aware of and understand of different communities. So making sure that you're, you know, purposely implementing your child in situations and friendship groups that won't look like them.
Yeah,
that is where it starts. It starts in the home. So for me, that's what I mean when I say that. Yeah. I think they have a powerful responsibility and they have a powerful kind of place to do that, because it's from the home and it's the nurture and it starts from the ground up. It's not about going in and starting from where they are, it's starting from the beginning. And you know, as we bring women on this journey now and men on this journey now from all backgrounds, I think when they internalize this structural change and they understand from their standpoint where they've won, if you like, because I always talk about who won the race, you know, then they can implement that into their children. And the reason I say women, because women naturally are more empathetic, usually, naturally, I think. And women are more... we share and communicate a lot more than men. Men go from A to B, women go A, B, C, D, F. You know, I think we go around the houses.
Yeah, I completely see what you mean. I think this restructuring is also important to understand that everyone can have this conversation. Yeah. Everyone has the capability of being empathic also. And I think it's inviting everybody to the table, but also recognizing at the same time that everyone has also, like, we have a lens that they simply don't, that others simply don't. I have a lens that you don't from just my upbringing, just my experience. And I think that's the same for anybody.
Yeah.
We cannot understand each other's lenses and perspectives. We can go and see the same movie and we'd get, we'd really like different something review. Different. We saw that happen. That blew up with Barbie. And I think that having that education is what's important. So it's such an injustice to not have taught people how to have this kind of conversation, how to support one another, how to be an ally. The word ally, the word woke, all these things are out there right now, but no one is speaking of what they truly are or critically bringing them apart or analyzing them. No one's critically analyzing them for us to fully understand. It's all of a sudden a buzz thing, like you should know this because it's a trend. And that can't, that how do we expect people to install that into their students, into their children, if we haven't even had those conversations around our own tables? We know what it's like when we're at home with our families. Everyone brings a different perspective to the table. Personally, I love it. Be the devil's advocate. Teach me something. Because again, you do not grow in comfort. And it is difficult. And resilience is something that I think a lot of women know, but everybody knows at the same time. I don't think everyone knows resilience in such a different way. And it's learning how. But also being resilient enough to rest is so important.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's a wild concept that isn't understood in a capitalistic world today.
Mm. Yeah, absolutely. I feel like I'm 100 miles an hour with the work that I do, because I genuinely feel that there's been a slight shift in the attention to this work as well. As I said in the beginning, 2020, it was like everybody was on it, you know, and it was like, oh my God, this is amazing. This is really great progress. And now I think when we talk about inclusion, the race issue is at the bottom.
Yeah.
Because we've like added so many other layers, you know, to that, that I think race is now being kind of pushed to the side a little bit. So for me, I'm working 100 miles an hour because I do not want this conversation to end.
Yeah.
And I need to continue to see change and progress. So, yeah, I'm doing everything in my power to embed the things that I'm doing, to embed them in our, you know, and infuse them into Wales that they are a part of and not an additional or on the side of. Do you see what I mean? So the media work we do, the support with businesses, everything, it's just for me, it's like, and also it's about funding, isn't it? You talked about money earlier. Mm-hmm. And I think funding is always a barrier to this work, because it's like, you know, when the funding pot runs out for the race equity, then you can basically say the project ends. So we need to make sure that we're creating projects. That's why I'm not a charity. I'm a social enterprise. So there's an enterprise, you know, there's an enterprise element to that. And how can I make sure that this is still making money, that we can support this work moving forward and not rely on whether this is, you know, on the top of someone's agenda, you know?
Yeah, it's difficult to keep that conversation going 100%. Mm-hmm. And also to find that funding to survive, not even to be paid to be in a room, but even to just go home and be able to eat at night or be warm. Mm-hmm. And it is difficult. It's commendable working in this space. And I learned that the hard way, in a way, because you think you're resilient and then all of a sudden you've got to be it more. Yeah. You know, and it isn't a space people welcome you. Nobody's like, oh, where are the people who talk about ED&I? Nobody does that. Nobody welcomes you with open arms. People are like, oh God, what am I going to have to do? I hope I don't say the wrong thing. Will this cancel me?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that's what we have to literally deep dive into.
Yeah.
Will this cancel me? Yeah. And why am I uncomfortable? Mm-hmm. And having these conversations, existing is doing the work.
Yeah.
Is more than you can imagine.
Yeah.
And so thank you. Because it's because of what you're doing, it allows for women like me to continue. Mm-hmm. And it continues this cycle of support, relearning.
Mm-hmm.
And the well-being aspect, like you said, it doesn't exist. So as part of my practices, I do these lectures and I do these sessions and workshops and training, but it is non-negotiable. It comes with a well-being package.
Yeah.
So at the end of the day, we will do something to support our minds and support ourselves and our bodies and bring it together, because there's no way you can grow this much without rest and recovery.
Yeah.
Sleep, anyone who's working out, everyone says sleep is even more important than food.
Yeah,
it is. We nurture ourselves, we nurture our minds, but it's really important to rest.
On this day in 1959, Welsh footballer John Charles came third in the Ballon d'Or FIFA's annual award to the best male player.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. Follow us for more up-and-coming episodes as we continue to showcase the essence of I Am Wales. You can support more of our inclusive media work by going to www.beexcellence.co.uk. There you will find a link to Excellence Magazine and also our weekly radio show on Radio Cardiff, every Friday morning from 9 till 11 a.m. on 98.7 FM. Thanks again for listening.